When certain conclusions are arrived at by these specialists, remedies are tried out by means of impressing these conclusions upon the minds of human beings living in the world who are in positions where their advice will be acted upon by nations or powerful groups of reformers, for mankind must be helped when crises in the world are too great and too serious for them to solve by their own endeavors. In periods of crisis, great world leaders seem to stand on a pinnacle and shine. Often a man who previously was but a humble politician or leader of a party, arises and becomes a prominent figure in world politics. Wisdom and leadership far above what would normally be expected of him is the result, which all can observe. When the crisis is over and his great work is finished, such a man seems to go back into his former obscurity. Such men are chosen and they are helped by one or other of the great beings who brood over this universe for the benefit of mankind. Whilst the period of overshadowing lasts, they are indeed supermen, but when the crisis is over, this overshadow has to be withdrawn for each man who has free will by right and may only be helped so far and no further. On these levels there are men who are interested in the growing shortage of food for a humanity that is increasing by millions each year. Devas help with their problems by suggesting new methods of cultivation. These suggestions are put into the minds of those living in the world, who are responsible for such problems in their particular regions. In this way new ideas and methods come to light and are gradually adopted by mankind. You will be able to attend some of the conferences which take place in these spheres, and add proof for yourself that what I am telling you is indeed true. But it is not likely that you will be able to remain at such conferences until conclusions are reached, for they often go on for weeks or months, calculated by your idea of time, and naturally you will have to return to your body after a few hours away from it. Great progress is often made at such conferences and suggestions are made to people living in the world, which enable humanity to advance in all its different ways. You probably have wondered why the world progresses much more quickly one century than another. It is not only that distances have been obliterated by air travel and such things as wireless, but simply because mankind in general is slowly but surely becoming more interested in solving existing problems, and by such solution the masses benefit. In other words, the more evolved, men are becoming more and more unselfish, which proves that they, at least have learnt some of the lessons that lives in the physical world are meant to teach us all. It is difficult to explain the work of the Deva kingdom, for the methods used are so very different from those to which you are accustomed. To understand it all, you have to remember that the Deva kingdom controls to a large extent the part of life we call nature, the seas, the winds, the use of the sun in cultivation and such things as the correct times of the year for planting different seeds, are all part of the particular domain of the Devas. They join in discussions with members of our evolution, when their specific knowledge and experience can be utilized. Usually they transmit their thoughts through a mental process and not through words, but they can use the medium of speech when it is necessary for them to do so. From time to time you hear in the world of a tornado, a cyclone or an earthquake that leaves in its wake much loss of human life, devastation and thousands of homeless. You may have wondered why a beneficent providence could allow such things to happen, but have you looked for the possible reason of such tragedies? Is it not true that previous to such devastation, men and women have been living in those places under conditions which breed crime instead of progress? A tragedy such as I visualize, could easily be the means of awakening a slothful government to its responsibilities and often rebuilding scheme is at once commenced, so that those who remain alive may be housed under conditions considerably more favorable than before. Apostrophe The Devas control these cyclones and earthquakes and I know from personal experience that their pity for a humanity which, through its blindness, makes such disasters necessary, is great indeed. They allocate large numbers of their people to meet those unfortunates who lose their lives through these disasters, as they pass from the physical to the astral world, do all in their power to minister to their fear and help them acclimatize themselves to their new conditions. It is the same when world wars take place and innumerable souls are slung out of their bodies by modern weapons. There are insufficient astral helpers belonging to our evolution to deal with the rate of killing that accompanies an army advancing against heavy opposition, so members of the Deva evolution take their places side by side with men, to do what they can to help the many who are terrified at the moment of their passing. It is indeed true that there are times when men and angels, Devas, walk in unison, each serving God to the utmost of his being. I must now tell you a little about life as it is lived on the seventh and last sphere of the astral world. The first thing that will strike you, when you visit that part, is the complete absence of buildings of any sort. There are no signs of human habitation at all, but you will find that there are permanent residents living at this level, although they do everything in their power to discourage contact when other humans approach. Such men are of the opinion that their progress in evolution can only be accomplished by resorting to complete seclusion and a life of silence. In the physical world there are holy men, who live apart from humanity in out-of-the-way places at the foot of, or at the top of, lonely mountains where humans seldom penetrate. These men spend their lives in meditation, fasting and living what the world would describe as an ascetic life. Such men are the same after death and in due time they make their way to the seventh sphere of the astral world, and continue their lives of meditation there. You will find men, who during their earthly lives as monks or friars, were members of brotherhoods, which enjoyed absolute silence and a life apart from other normal human beings. These men have become so used to living within themselves, praying for long periods for the helping of mankind, that after death they derive solace in continuation of the same existence that they lived for so many years on earth. There is no necessity at the astral level for any such persons to seek for a cave or build themselves houses to live in. Neither food nor accommodation is necessary to their existence, so they usually live in the open, in woods and out of the way places, where they are most likely to be left alone and undisturbed. In addition to the humans who lived at this level, you will find countless numbers of highly evolved members of the Deva kingdom that carry on work but have no contact whatever with the members of our evolution. You will also find those human beings whose sojourn at the astral level is over and who have to pass through this seventh sphere in order to reach the mental world, through which they must pass on their journey back to the higher part of themselves, the ego, who has his natural habitat on the higher spheres of the mental world, called the casual level. These humans are usually accompanied to the seventh sphere by guides, who are men like themselves but more evolved and older souls. The particular work of these guides is to explain, in detail, what is meant by the second death. The journey from the astral world to the mental world is entirely painless and is merely the dropping of another sheath. The guides make it their business to eradicate any fear that might arise in the minds of these people, for although we have all traveled the same journey many times before, after each physical incarnation has been completed, yet we do not remember those previous journeys, because for each new physical incarnation we have entirely new mental, astral and physical bodies, which do not carry with them detailed memories of past lives. The passing from the astral to the mental world is something outside the control of the average individual and, when his time comes, he is forced to drop his astral body for the simple reason that he has no further experience to gain at the astral level. He must then pass to the mental world in order to consolidate the mental work that he has accomplished during his physical existence and add it to the reservoir of knowledge, contained within the permanent atom, representing all his previous lives. Having received all the necessary information that can be given to him on the subject of his passing, the man gradually falls asleep and awakes almost immediately in the mental world, having during that brief moment of sleep dropped his astral body forever. Friends meet him in the mental world in exactly the same way as friends met him when he passed from the physical to the astral world. He commences an entirely new type of life. In the case of the average man, this is usually much shorter than his life in the astral world, though the duration is longer for evolved men. apostrophe the astral body which has been left behind by the individual who has passed on, takes some little time to disintegrate and return to the main mass of astral matter. During the period of disintegration, the body retains a likeness to the individual who previously occupied it. You must understand that it is only a shell, yet owing to the fluidic nature of astral matter, it can move about and to an inexperienced person seems to retain a semblance of life. I have seen people who have visited this seventh sphere during their physical plane existence, nonplussed, equals baffled, at finding that they are unable to get into conversation with some of these shells which they find floating about. A shell is not a corpse in the sense that the physical body after death is a corpse because, although it has no connection whatsoever with the real man, the ego who has dropped it, yet it still contains a little life. Indeed, until the disintegration is complete, the shell must think of itself as a man, for it is a fragment, a shadow of the man who is gone. At spiritualistic seances we sometimes see manifestations of various sorts when, instead of the sitters getting into touch with the man himself, they only contact the shell. This can happen when the man has been dead a long time. A friend of a sitter seems to come back and talks to them, yet in various ways he does not appear to be as intellectual as he used to be, he seems to have deteriorated. That is impossible. A man does not deteriorate, he progresses on the other side of death, so whenever one comes in contact with such a case, one may be sure that it is not the real man at all, but only this fragment, this shell he has left behind. Although a shell is inanimate, lifeless, it is quite possible for other creatures to enter it, to take it on as a temporary body and play the part of the original man. This is often done by astral human beings who enjoy playing practical jokes, and by playful nature spirit who may take hold of one of these shells, put it on as one would, as an overcoat, and masquerade in it. The man masquerading inside the shell will very likely give proof of his identity, for whatever entered the brain of the original occupant during his lifetime will have passed into the astral counterpart, and it will remain there for the use of any entity masquerading in that body. In many cases, a certainty may be acquired by an investigator who is sufficiently clairvoyant to see what is behind the shell, but whoever is investigating needs to take great care, for even the shell from which the fragment of the man has disappeared can be galvanized into activity within the aura of a medium. S120, you may come into contact with shells sometime in the future. One thing you can be quite sure about is that they are in no way dangerous and can do you no harm. Apostrophe This concludes my talk for today. You have undoubtedly realized that it completes my very brief survey of life on the different spheres of the world next to this. I want you to prepare a list of questions for me to answer tomorrow morning. After that, when you have had several days of experimenting on your own, I shall visit you again and tell you something about life as it is lived in the mental world. I shall not be able to give you as much detail of this world as I have been able to give you about the astral world, because it is much more difficult to provide analogies of what takes place in the mental world and compare them with similar things that take place in the physical world. Life there is so very different from here, for everything has to do with thought. Here you have tables and chairs and buildings. In the astral world, thoughts are the tables, chairs and buildings. In fact, there is nothing there but thought, so you can well understand my difficulty. I shall probably take you on a short visit to the mental plane also, in the hope that you will be able to remember something of what you sensed rather than saw there, but I shall tell you more about this in future. I shall come again tomorrow at the usual time when I hope your list of questions will be ready. S120, Chapter 9. I had a wonderful night's sleep. I awoke this morning at the usual hour much refreshed, but without recollection of anything having happened during the night. My list of questions is ready, and I hope Acharya will not consider it too lengthy. I was rereading my questions when the door opened and Acharya greeted me with, Apostrophe There is no need to apologize for the number of your questions. I have discouraged your asking questions regularly because I knew much would become clear to you with personal experiences at the astral level, and too many interruptions do not help either the speaker or the listener. I shall do my best to answer your question in language which should clarify your difficulties. Q. In your talks you have never mentioned anything about the conventional heaven, to which the bulk of Christians are taught to aspire. Is there such a place, or does it only exist in the imagination of the priests and ministers of religion who insist on its existence? A. There is certainly no such place as heaven, but there is a state of consciousness, which is often referred to as heaven by the people living under those conditions. Some people argue that the state of consciousness is found in the higher stages of the astral world, whereas others insist that it is found in the mental world only. Some people argue that there is a difference between that which is called paradise and that which is called heaven. You will remember that the Christ, speaking to the penitent thief, is reported to have said, "This day shalt thou be with me in paradise." Paradise was the name given by the Greeks to the upper regions of the astral plane, and they taught that heaven was found in the mental world, after man had left the astral world on his journey back to the home of the soul or ego. At these higher levels some men surround themselves with the thought forms of seraphim and cherubim, in strict accordance with the ancient Hebrew scriptures. It is perfectly real to them, and it harms no one if they are content to think it all real, so why worry them? Many of them even make thought forms of God or Saint Peter, and nothing that you could say would convince them that they are living in a state of illusion. There will come a day when they have developed their intellect a little more, when they will begin to try to ascertain what is fact and what is illusion. I notice that although you ask about the conventional heaven, you have not mentioned the conventional hell, that of course no more exists than heaven exists. But usually one does not find people in the astral world making thought forms of a conventional hell and living under such conditions, for no one is ever so self-critical as to be quite sure that hell is the right place for him. Most of the people who live surrounded by the thought forms of their idea of a conventional heaven are only too happy to exist in such circumstances, as they feel they have either earned the right to be there, or have been extremely lucky to find themselves in a place for which they were not quite sure they had qualified. A conventional heaven created by people living at the mental level is quite different, though it serves the same purpose for the people concerned. Q. You said in your third talk that you would explain the difference between an animal's life in the astral world and the life lived there by a human being. What is the difference? A. There is a considerable difference between the life of an animal in the astral world and that of a human being. In the case of the former, it seldom inhabits spheres of that world higher than the third, for the life that a man lives on the higher spheres has little interest for an animal, and only in exceptional cases, example on this mentioned in this book on afterlife, does a human being take a favorite animal with him when he passes to the higher spheres. An animal certainly has a short sojourn at the astral level after each physical life has been lived, but it does not usually last for more than 10 to 15 years at the most. When the time comes for the group soul, of which the animal is a part, to reincarnate in new animal bodies, the animal entities which have been living separate existences at the astral level are again drawn back into the group soul, and their separate identities at once cease to be. The group soul, when its various parts return to it, is colored by the experiences of those several parts, and the life force of which the group soul is made up then splits itself into sections again, each section inhabiting a new animal entity, and further experiences are gained in these new bodies. As I have explained to you previously, this goes on until the group soul is ready to individualize as a human being. Those few years that an animal spends in the astral world are always happy, even in the very rare cases where a dog dies from a broken heart, because its master gave it away or left it with strangers when he was forced to go on a long journey. Such an animal quickly finds a new home. In the astral world you never see a dog ask for food, whereas you have seen for yourself many humans continue to eat and drink after death, merely because they have formed the habit of so doing. A dog or a cat only eats when it is hungry and seldom from greed. At the astral level it doesn't get hungry, so it never asks for food. A dog of the hunting species has during its life been trained to hunt. After death it continues to do so. Its instinct is to look for its quarry, and that very looking is in itself a thought, so a quarry immediately appears and the dog at once chases it. Whether it catches it or not is of little importance, for the quarry, which is only a thought form, cannot be killed in the ordinary sense of the word, but the dog enjoys the chase and its life continues to be a happy one. A horse which during its lifetime has been a favorite hack of a natural lover of horses soon finds another owner with a similar love of his kind, and the same routine goes on with benefit and pleasure to both horse and rider. In some cases, after a favorite animal has died, its owner in the world thinks strongly about it when he goes to sleep at night. The animal feels the call and sometimes is able to contact its late owner and share a few hours of his company. Unfortunately, this is not a desirable thing, for the horse or dog feels the loss of its late master when such a person has to return to his physical body after the sleep period is completed. Therefore, it is kinder that they should be allowed to attach themselves to new masters or mistresses. There are rare cases where the affection between a human being and his pets is so strong that the group soul, of which the animal is a part, is in its way linked with that human being. This can only happen towards the end of the group soul period, when it is divided into only two parts, awaiting the time for its individualization as a human being. Because the human being has done so much for that group soul, by helping to eradicate the last vestige of fear from animals attached to him, the entire group soul, consisting of two dogs or two cats for example, has two or three consecutive, following lives in the same household. In this way, the time when individualization can take place is often considerably shortened. I could tell you of the authentic instances of this happening, but my time is limited. The period that an animal spends in the astral world is too short for the conditions ruling there to influence deeply the evolution of the group soul, so when that period is over, the animals disappear from the homes to which they have attached themselves, to return to their group souls for new incarnations in the physical world, where further experience is gained. Q. Why is it that Charles did not contact us on the second astral journey? Is it that he is no longer interested in me, owing to his new life being so very different and more thrilling than the physical one, or can he not join up with us without your assistance? A. I'm very pleased that you have raised these queries, for though it will take me some time to explain what you want to know, it is most necessary that you should be clear as to why opportunities of movement at the astral level vary for temporary visitors and permanent residents. Whilst physical life continues, the astral body is an auxiliary body, but it is used by you during sleeping hours for activities in the astral world. That body, composed of astral matter, has particles in it relative to all the different spheres of the astral world, and so long as you have a physical body, these particles are intermingled one with the other. You are able to travel to any sphere of the astral world up or down merely by exercising your willpower, and, in accordance with the sphere to which you go, these particles of your astral body become active and make such journeys possible. To make it perfectly clear, when you are sojourning on the first sphere, the particles relative to that sphere are at that time active. But when you pass from the first sphere, for example, to the fourth, it means that the fourth sphere particles become active, whilst the particles relating to the other spheres remain dormant, so long as your activities are at that four-sphere level. As long as you have a physical body, this process goes on. But when the physical body is dropped at the moment of death, the astral body, which before was a mass of revolving particles all intermingling, rearranges itself into an entirely different form. In order that you should understand this perfectly, try and visualize the astral body after death as an ovoid, like an orange, with a core and with seven separate and distinct skins surrounding that core. The core represents the permanent atom relating to all the different spheres of both the astral and the mental worlds. The seven skins are composed of matter relative to the seven different spheres that exist at the astral level, of which you now know something, and, at the moment of death, The astral body so rearranges the matter of which it is composed, that the outside or densest skin is made up of atoms similar to those which you require to function on the first or densest sphere of that world. When, after a period of time, you leave the first sphere and pass to the second, you drop that outer skin, leaving the atoms relative to the second sphere of that world, which now become active, on the outside of your body. The same thing applies when you pass to higher levels. In passing, each outer skin drops away and leaves the skin beneath it, which at once becomes active and enables you to be fully conscious in the sphere to which you have passed. Now, if you wish to pass down again from, let us say, the fourth to the first sphere, it is necessary for a permanent resident to call upon the atoms contained within the core of the orange, the permanent atomic order, to effect that change. This requires a much greater effort of will than in the case of the temporary sojourner, for he must draw round his astral body yet again a new skin relative to the astral matter of this sphere in which he wishes to function. Charles did not accompany us on our second astral journey because I did not invite him to do so, therefore he did not know that such a journey was contemplated. You can now realize that, had we taken Charles with us on that journey, it would have been necessary for me to explain to him in detail the machinery that would have had to be employed to enable him to get back to the first sphere where he is still living. It is not because Charles is finding life at the astral level so full that you have not seen him during the past few days, but simply that the average individual who lives in the astral world does not hanker, equals wish. After contacts with people living in our world, in the same way that you wished to make contact with Charles immediately after his death, you ask if Charles could join up with us without any assistance. Most certainly he could, providing he thought about us sufficiently strongly to make that desire known to us. He could, for example, wait in your bedroom every night if he wished, for the moment when you pass out of your physical body, then he could make known to you his wish to accompany you, wherever you go. P. 125. He has not shown this strong inclination, so you have not had any contact with him lately. In case you are worried, let me assure you that Charles, at the moment, is busy with a temporary attraction which he was for a member of the opposite sex, who has recently died. He is very happy showing her around and proving to her how much more he knows about conditions than she does at present. My suggestion to you is to leave him alone for the time being, as I think that later you will link up with him again for your mutual benefit. Q. You have not mentioned why some people are born cripples and others blind. Others again deaf and dumb. Is there a reason? A. There certainly is a reason, and my few remarks relating to the law of karma, or cause and effect, should have answered the question for you. It is essential for you to impress quite clearly on your mind that all such tragedies are produced entirely by the individuals concerned by their actions in previous lives, and are not due to an evil creator who likes to see humans suffer. A child is sometimes born a cripple, because in a previous life he was the cause of extreme suffering to another human being or to an animal. A man may, in a drunken rage, beat a child so cruelly that the beating produces a physical deformity, which medical science is unable to cure. This would undoubtedly cause such a man to be born a cripple in his next life and so be forced to suffer in something of the same way, for the purpose to learn him/herself. People are sometimes born deaf and dumb for the reason that, in a previous life, they had been unfortunate enough to be a parent of a deaf and dumb child when, instead of making family conditions happy for such a person, the parent showed his disappointment at having a child which was abnormal by taking it out on the poor creature, who could not defend itself, thereby making life much worse for it than it need have been. Even evolved beings who know the reason for children being born cripples or abnormal in any way, sometimes fail to realize that having an abnormal child is an exceedingly fine opportunity for them to make good karma, by treating it with much sympathy and understanding. You may argue that justice today is very different from justice in the past, but the unthinking actions of our past lives must be paid for, Even though if those past incarnations man was less sensitive to pain than he is today and used to much more ruthless treatment. Do not forget that it is the intention, which decides the amount of suffering. Similar karmic consequences follow on emotional and mental cruelty. Quite often one sees a mother, who is a widow, putting obstacles in the way of a son marrying, merely because she selfishly wishes to keep the boy within the family circle.